Are you an entrepreneur who doesn't know when to pick up the phone or get out the keyboard to contact your CPA?
A lot of people are like that. And one of those things that you have to figure out when is the right time to do that is when you feel like you don't know what's going on. How much money am I making? How do I pay my taxes? I'm running my business out of my checkbook and I have no clue what's going on. I don't know if my employees are making me money. I don't know if my products are making money. I don't know which way I'm going. I'm upside down. I can't concentrate or can't think about anything other than where the heck am I, instead of thinking, how do I grow and continue on my business? That's when you should call.
So if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking to have a tax question in regards to that, drop it in the comments and we'll try to get back to you.
Live Studio C, Common Sense, Ohio. You can check us out at channel 511 if you want a podcast, or you can just watch us today, Common Sense, Ohio. You can check us out at commonsenseohioshow.com. Big stuff coming at you. Stop the whining. There's a big veto override effort in Ohio. Why do we care? Well, because it's Ohio. We're Common Sense, Ohio. The SCOTUS says the boss actually has the power to hire and fire its employees. Who knew? Who knew? Yeah. We'll explore that a little bit. A nice 6-3 decision. And then finally, rescissions. Are we actually cutting costs? Well, not really. It's like killing an elephant with a BB gun. Mm-hmm. But at least there's something, thanks to the vice president of the United States. You know, those who follow the show know that I always do a this day in history sort of snippet. I'm going to do that again today. It turns out, this day in history, Norm, 1945, we tested the bomb out in New Mexico.
Trinity.
And this was, it's interesting because, you know, there's still this debate about whether we should have dropped the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But I heard a different, there's some interesting takes on this, but no matter what you say, we needed to end that war. We needed to be done with it. I happen to believe that it was the right decision. I think we saved lots and lots of American lives and we stopped the war in its tracks, basically.
Yeah. Well, if the one part of Japan that we did invade was Okinawa, and if that battle was any indication of what it would be like to go onto the mainland and invade that, it would have been a total bloodbath. And they were training children and women to come out to the beaches and meet the U.S. Marine Corps at the sea. I mean, can you imagine the carnage? I mean,
not only Americans, but Japanese.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. Well, and you know, we have the perspective that we can look at it 2020 vision. We can look backwards.
Yeah.
I think it would be, it's one of those time travel things that would probably be a destination, kind of go, okay, that would be a nice stop to kind of feel.
What was the mood at the time?
What was the mood?
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was just a lot of indecisiveness.
And understand, you know, the Japanese and the Germans killed more people than any other country in, I think, in history. I mean killed, like, civilians.
Yeah.
I mean, go check out the rape of Nanking for the Japanese. And look, I'm not dissing the Japanese people, folks. I'm not doing that. But this was a
piece
war
of history.
This
yes.
was a war. Yeah. And you know, we were the good guys. I don't care what anybody says. Mm-hmm. We were Definitely. The good guys. The Nazis killed more civilians than any other. I mean, this is like they were the aggressors. They may have had their reasons, whatever they are, but we had our reasons too. So we had to stop it. We stopped it. The war ended. We became allies. And I think there's also this interesting history going back or looking back on it. We didn't share this technology immediately with Uncle Joe, Stalin. And I think we sort of thought by that show of strength, we could, you know, maybe establish a little bit more peace. We were wrong.
Totally wrong.
We were wrong, but there was some of that.
He knew all about it in real time because he had spies within the Manhattan Project.
Right.
You know, and, you know, a lot of people also, of course, we know about all the horrors of Nazi Germany at places like Auschwitz, where, you know, ethnic cleansing was industrialized. But the Japanese, they had a unit, I think it was Unit 9, and they were doing experiments on Koreans and Chinese, medical stuff, you know, just as crazy, you know, as in some respects as what the Nazis were doing to, like, twins. You know, using one twin as a control while they torture the other twin and then, you know, try to figure out what the outcome is, you know, sick stuff like that. And the Japanese were doing the same stuff. And I don't think Americans know about that as much. And they also were not signatories to the Geneva Convention. So we had things like the Bataan Death March and all kinds of, you know, inhumanity kinds of things that were done to captured U.S. And, you know, allied soldiers. So it was brutal. Mm-hmm. And the idea, you know, you just think of a mom and dad that sent their son off to war. And if their son was killed because President Truman didn't use the atom bomb, well, how would people feel about that?
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So,
like, you mean you didn't use all the tools in the toolbox?
And this is not to say that we did it because the Japanese deserved it, but it is to say that at the time, to your point, Brett, if you go back and stick yourself in that situation in history, and I don't care what all the movies and all the writers, everybody says now, you put yourself in history, it's not like they didn't turmoil over the decision. They clearly did.
And, oh, yeah, it was debated heavily.
And, you know, it ended the war.
Yeah.
It ended the war.
And by the way,
and it was time to end the war.
On the calendar. So there's also like a racial aspect to this. Like, oh, you would drop the atom bomb on the Japanese, but you wouldn't have done that, you know, to the German people. Well, as of July the 16th, 1945, the war was over in Europe.
All right. Well, that's right. We didn't have it.
Right.
We didn't have it to use on the Nazis. If they, if this was the test at Trinity, you know, in New Mexico, and July the 16th, the war in Europe ended in May.
Yeah.
So that would be an interesting, you know, getting
heady. Well, that is debate.
Getting heady is like, would we have turned this on our European descendants?
Maybe.
You know, or ancestors, I should say, you know? I think the hatred for the Nazis and Hitler were so deep, we probably would have. Maybe strategically.
Maybe. I don't know what we would have done. And I think a lot of that might have depended upon how close we were to winning the war conventionally.
Yeah, true.
And here's the other thing. True. And here's what Germany, with all its flaws, was not doing. It was not gearing up to fight to the last man with women and children on the beaches.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, as the German army was retreating, they were like talking to the Americans saying, come on, let's go fight Stalin.
Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah. Well, different. And there was a plot to kill Hitler. There were signs that within the Nazi regime, people were trying to take him out.
Yeah. Yeah. So who knows what we'd have done.
It was a little bit more complex.
Yeah.
And we had our people there. Like, yes. Americans were there.
Right.
Right. So in
prison camps.
So you would have, like, if you're going to blow up, if you're going to drop that there, you're killing your own.
Yeah.
And you know, people would say, well, if you're not willing to kill, like, you're not going to go kill your own. It's a war, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, it ended the war. We can debate it. It'll always be debated. But it ended the war, and the test was this day in history. The other thing happened on this day in history, and I actually remember the time frame in my life when I read this book, J.D. Salinger's Catcher in the Rye, was published today in history.
Okay.
And that was 1951.
Interesting. Okay.
Not always an easy book to find in your public school library.
There's some content that's little, young man oriented.
A little racy.
A little racy. Holden Caulfield.
Is that a band? Is that a banned book?
Not banned.
I don't think it's banned.
But I don't know. I don't have
you
that
probably
list
couldn't
memorized.
Find it in a, you probably couldn't you know, find it in a third grade library.
As you know, like, Ohio has 800 school districts. It would be a school district by school district policy, unless a given state had a ban. But generally what people are doing these days is they're putting that behind some kind of firewall so that only, you know, children that maybe have their parents' permission can get certain books. You know, like, it's gotten down to where Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn, you know, because they have the N-word in it.
Yeah.
Those are behind a firewall now.
Yeah.
I remember, I read both those books, obviously. Not obviously, but I read both those books in my teenage years, if not even young teen years. I mean, I think we were like 12, 13. I don't know when I read it.
Probably
but I remember, I didn't even have to read Huck Finn, but I did.
Because you felt like it was a sequel.
It was a sequel to Tom Sawyer. And I remember forgetting to get off the bus because I was so enthralled with that. Yeah. I mean, that may be one of the best books ever written.
Oh, for
Huckleberry
sure.
Finn. I mean, it is phenomenal.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
And people use those words, and that was reality. And, you know,
I mean, never
it doesn't
understood.
Mean he's approving of those words.
We're going to go down this rabbit hole a little bit. I never understood banning certain words if used in historical context.
Yeah.
Right. You know, to me, like in criminal law, and everybody knows what I do in criminal law, you have to have two things generally for a crime. And this goes, look, study your Western legal system. You need two things. You need an actus reus, a thing, an act. And then you need a mens rea, the mental intent. Now, this is an oversimplification for you law students and lawyers out there. Send me a comment. I'll debate it with you all day long. It's an oversimplification, but intent matters. And here's how I describe this when I talk to juries. It's like all you have to do, I love kids. And watching kids interact is sort of like this little bubble of human interaction.
Yeah.
You know, it's like watching puppies in a cage, how they nip each other and they find their boundaries. But when one kid does something to the other and they come tell mom and dad, it's almost always you hear this. And he did that on purpose. You did that on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which it matters that you didn't just throw the baseball. You threw the baseball and tried to hit his nose. Mm-hmm. You did it on purpose.
Yeah.
You took that from me on purpose. And you knew it was mine.
Banning things often leads to a very unhealthy fascination with it. You know, like it's elusive, so therefore it's attractive. And I never understood that about banning Mein Kampf, for example, in Germany.
Foolish.
And they just recently, have loosened up on that. But, you know, all these modern Germans, they know about the Hitler regime and they know about their country's horrible past. And there's museums where you can see Nazi stuff. If you're in Germany, you can see their airplanes and the Nazi symbols and stuff from Auschwitz. You don't have to go to Poland. You can be in Germany, and there's all kinds of stuff about the Final Solution. But then to withhold the key document that outlines the reasoning, as sick as it was.
Look, it was bad reasoning then. It's still bad reasoning. You should study it.
Right.
You should study it.
You should study it.
Or
it created all these skinhead guys who, like, worship Hitler, and it's like, well, maybe if you had educated them and made them
read that. Yeah. Right. So in the classic parallel in all our eras are in high school, you always had the kids who were writing like all the devil signs and everything in their notebooks and whatever, and all the bands that were like these guys weren't devil worshipers, but it was the pushback to say, you know what, F you, I can do this. I'm going to do it.
Right.
And you know, what are you rebelling against? What do you got?
Right. Somebody brought this up, and I don't know if this is an old idea or it just keeps resurfacing, but it's that, Tipper Gore and her labeling of albums.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Why don't we do that to books?
Yeah. I mean, look.
Rather than ban, because banning actually helps sales. Authors love being banned.
Well, sure. It's immediate attention.
They love it. And I'm not, that's not a negative or positive. I'm just saying, it really doesn't hurt them necessarily.
You should ban our show, maybe.
But it's like, why not put a label on it then? Rather than banning.
Yeah.
I mean, at least it's an outward sign to parents or anybody reading it. Okay, it's got some problems potentially. I don't
necessarily have a problem with that either. So if a school is going to say take Catcher in the Rye or Huck Finn or Tom Sawyer, what's another one that always catches the ire? Anyway, pick one.
Pick one, right.
And
right.
say, look, These are
Lady Chatterley's Lover. That's another one.
Yeah.
You know,
these are books that have maybe you have to have a certain grade level or a certain maturity. Or just say, look, with parent permission you can read them.
Yeah.
That's not banning a book.
No, it's not.
Now it's an infringement a little bit on the access to the book. But it's a time, place, and manner type restriction. I'd be almost okay with that.
Yeah.
But if you ban something like Mein Kampf, then you have buried the very essential seeds that you need to study in order not to repeat.
Yeah, right. The keystone for the entire Nazi movement is in that book.
That's right.
And to not understand it and not to see how warped the logic is in the book.
Right.
But if you don't read it, then you don't know how warped it is.
Yeah, I read that book. I mean, I'm trying to think probably my first year in college, I read that book. I read...
it's a chaotic book.
Machiavelli, The Prince. Mm-hmm. I read Leviathan, Hobbes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a bunch of John Locke stuff. You know, it's like these are fundamental works. I hate to call Mein Kampf a work, but it's, you know...
Well, it's a jumping off point.
You have to study this stuff.
Things that happened.
Yeah. You have to study this stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I didn't read it in reverence. I read it in academia. You know, you read it to learn.
Yeah.
And it wasn't taught to me in, like, here, this is good stuff. And I'm not even sure it was taught in bad stuff. It was taught Socratically back in those days. Back even in the 90s, I was still like I remember having group discussions. It was taught in my freshman seminar in college. Yeah. Yeah. We'd have group discussions about this. What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? Now, clearly, everybody knew to sit on your hands. You're not going to stand up and say, I love Hitler. But it was discussed at least, like, what's wrong with this thought? What's wrong with this ideology?
For sure. So if you want to discuss, you know, the Southern mentality prior to the Civil War and during the Civil War, and you want to understand what racial thinking was, you know, in the South and in the North, for that matter, by a lot of people about the, you know, subhuman alleged status of black people. If you don't read the speeches on the floor of the House and the Senate from back then, when Southern representatives were getting up and saying, you can't let black people marry white people. You can't let black people be free. They are a subhuman group of people. And reading that stuff today is horrible. But if you don't know what came out of their mouths,
and
you
why?
Don't really understand the Civil War.
Right. And think even beyond that, even more abstract, if you're given literature or content like this and you're encouraged to discuss it, think of the parts of your brain that it opens up. Because this is, folks, what we call, and this is what we don't have anymore, critical thought.
Right.
Yeah.
This is critical thought.
Right.
You are able to look at something, analyze what's good, what's bad, why these people had this ideology.
Exactly.
Where did it come from?
Right.
And explore it. Because until you explore it, if I just tell you, Norm, that's bad, don't do it.
Yeah.
It never worked for me. Even in math, it didn't work for me. We had a math teacher.
Yeah.
And he was one of these guys that, why do we do this? Like, because I always had to know why.
Exactly.
I'd be like, why? Because I say so.
Yeah.
Because I say so is what he used to tell me. He's like, well, that doesn't work for me, dude. I need to understand why it works.
There is some math. You just remember that it's like, just believe it. It is.
It is.
It is what it
but
is.
But you understand.
That's math.
I need to actually write out five lines and say, okay, that equals five and count them.
Right.
That's oversimplifying. Yeah. But I need to understand it.
Right.
And you have to get to the bottom of this to understand it. And then you are not doomed to repeat it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. So with that, we should probably jump into the show.
Yeah.
DeWiner. DeWiner's veto. So what's going on? I mean, look, I've not held back on my thoughts on DeWine over the years, and most of it stems from his COVID nonsense. And I suppose everybody's got similar criticisms. But
well, he's just a rhino. Let's just
he's an establishment guy.
He's a rhino.
Don't even use that term. Just an establishment guy.
But he's always been a rhino. He's been one forever. And I knew him when he was the lieutenant governor. And a senator from Ohio, and he's always been one of those weak. He's not a conservative.
He's not a conservative idea. And you know, I hear tell, and I don't know this to be true, but I hear tell when I was involved in, believe it or not, when during the COVID shutdowns, I was talking to some of the lawyers around the country, and one particularly in Ohio, who was challenging some of this stuff in court, and you know, it was big picture stuff.
Yeah.
And I hear tell, I have no verification of this, but I think it's true. And this attorney advised me that there might've been some emails to establish it. I never saw them. So please don't take it that I'm not offering proof. I'm just offering innuendo and rumor.
Sure.
The COVID establishment, the Faucis of the world actually chose Ohio because DeWine would have been receptive. Like DeWine was a Republican governor, but he was receptive to sort of this, you know, bigger picture regulatory control over things.
Yeah.
And they chose Ohio to be one of the early test cases for the shutdown.
He did set the stage for it.
Yeah.
And he had the dailies. He had what's-her-face coming on stage and talking about it.
Dr.
Burks.
No, it wasn't Burks.
I thought you meant nationally.
No. Shoot.
The doc was.
Yeah. The doc was.
She was a holdover from, you know, but the Democratic
He did set it up.
Yeah, and
that
so
he would be open to it.
He was the guy
to follow that line of thinking.
And I think it's true. I think according to
his pattern, he was Obama's guy on rolling out Obamacare. Like he completely, you know, accepted the idea that for people that can't pay, we're gonna add them into Medicaid, and that's why you have between 1/4 and 1/3 of Ohioans on Medicaid now. which is it was meant for poor people, you know, like single young mothers that basically have to care for a child, you know, and can't work. So they get Medicaid. Or somebody taking care of their elderly parent with Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
And they quit their job to full-time take care of their parent. They should be getting Medicaid. But you've got, like, working, capable adults now getting Medicaid. And it's, you know, finally in the big, beautiful bill, there's a work requirement or you got to be going to school or you have to prove you're looking for work. And, you know, like somehow that's too onerous.
Yeah.
And so DeWine had that reputation with Obama during Obamacare that he was going to, you know, cooperate and,
yeah, he
and
was one of the, he
implement
was
it.
One of the soldiers. That's
yeah,
right.
One of the soldiers. And Obama said, well, I like this guy, you know. So
anyway, yeah. so he tried to veto and now we're trying not
well,
to
Well, he
veto.
Vetoed 67 things and he vetoed things like, the rate of increase was under the bill. One of the things he vetoed is that there would be a 20 mil floor. And if you went past the 20 mils
on the budget,
on the property tax in your county,
okay.
There was a 20 mil floor and anything above that was going to be implemented by a much slower phase-in period. Then the other thing was local reductions would have been authorized by each county's budget committee would be able to independently look at the needs of the counties and the fire stations and other things supported by the property taxes and
so
reduce the rates.
Big picture, what we're looking at here is an effort or maybe a groundswell in Ohio to get rid of property tax.
And some big organizations are behind it. So the
yeah.
Ohio
and
Chamber.
And Vivek is touted this too.
Ohio Chamber of Commerce, I mean, is behind this. The Ohio Realtors Association, which has 36,000 members in Ohio, are behind this effort to override the veto. But it's going to be a close call. You need 60 votes in the House. And the Republicans only have 65 members in the House, so they're going to need at least 60, and they already have 3 that have publicly said they're not going to vote for it.
I mean, look, here the big picture here is
it'll be a tough override.
Let's say Ohio. Let's just kick this around for a minute. What's Ohio look like without property tax? And you can't. I just refuse. I don't refuse to. I have
so
a hard
you're referring
time.
To the upcoming constitutional
right.
Issue because, like, that'll be on the ballot
like veto
next
or no
year.
Veto, where it's like if Ohio gets rid of property tax,
yeah.
We've talked about this a little bit because I know Florida, like there's other states, but you know Ohio doesn't have a big significant revenue stream to cover its budget. So like we're screwing with one side of the equation, but not the other. And you know sooner or later, they're going to have to come up with money to pay for the stuff that the people want.
Right.
And if it's not property tax, what will it be?
Yeah.
Probably sales tax.
A sales tax increase? It's pretty high already.
Yeah. I mean, that's one easy one.
One easy
seems
one.
To go through.
And they just reduced to a flat tax the income tax.
Income tax.
Yeah, the income tax. So look,
really, sales is kind of the only...
Well, we're sort of joking.
Unless we generate some kind of tax we can't even think of right now.
So part of the override, the thesis, is that people know, even though it's not on the ballot in 2025, people know that there is this effort... And I think this is why people want to override. There's an effort to put on the ballot next year a total elimination of the property tax.
Yeah.
Like, don't make it a constitutionally...
Well, sure. And like we said, Vivek is coming in running on that platform, among others, I guess. But yeah.
So, I mean, I think people are scrambling right now to do something because DeWine really... I mean, he appointed this like blue ribbon committee to come up with something he says is better than this override. But it's got Pat T. Barry, the former congressman from Ohio, people like that. But like, hey, at this point, it's going to get out of their hands. And the public, like they passed the abortion and the recreational marijuana last year, you know, the people with a just a 51%, you know, just over 50% can add to the Constitution.
This is
anything.
The problem. This is the problem.
This is the problem.
This is where I have been pounding this table now for
exactly
years.
Exactly right.
For years and years and years and years. And those on whatever the independent issue is, and this is a relevant discussion for bigger picture stuff that this will lead us into our discussion of the latest Supreme Court case, too.
Yeah.
Because what you have is this is people choosing issues, not the levers of power that are at play.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is if we choose an issue that basically says we're going to amend the we can make it easy to change or amend the Ohio Constitution. Right. And basically what we did is that we created an alternative legislative branch of government.
Yeah. Yeah.
And instead of the Ohio Revised Code, we've got the Ohio Constitution. So now if we don't have the votes in Congress or in the General Assembly, as we call it here in Ohio, no big deal. We'll just amend the Constitution and do it that way. The problem is you can't just easily change it back. It does, like these kind of changes don't
– No.
They are rarely retracted.
Yeah.
Rarely. They just become law.
That's right.
And like it goes way back even to the casino era when these constitutional amendments were establishing where casinos are going to be.
Yeah.
It's just lunacy. These are legislative issues, and I don't even think that should be, but these are legislative issues, not constitutional issues. So now, look, you reap what you sow, folks. You reap what you sow. So if it's easy to do it for abortion, now it's easy to do it for this. And the next interest group is going to come along and make it easy for that.
Sure.
So
and it's eye candy on the ballot. You know, you look at that, you go in there, you're voting, and here's a measure that you can vote for to eliminate your entire property tax.
I mean, yeah, I'm on it, right?
Yeah,
right.
I'm in. You know, like, oh wow, I get to keep $15,000 more.
It may be a good idea. It may not be a good idea. But the idea of like our governmental structure is designed to air this stuff out on the General Assembly floor.
Yeah.
And anybody, I've done it. I've gone down and watched like our state legislature in action on an issue. I was working on gambling machines years ago. So, the skill games and all this other nonsense. But I do a ton of legal defense and legal work on those kind of games. And I went down when there was a vote in the General Assembly and it was like, it gave me chills because you literally had guys standing up and gals, actually, too, standing
up.
I don't mean to exclude the gals because I said guys. So anyway, shut up. We had folks standing up,
right,
making speeches.
Yeah.
And I don't remember what it was all about, but there was one guy, I think he was on the side that I was advocating at that point. And he goes, I'm gonna use my five favorite words. I told you so. Or four favorite words. I told you so. And it was like this really sort of compelling oratory.
Yeah.
And the idea, they were presenting facts, they were presenting evidence to support their side,
right?
And then they were voting on it. And then they took a break and they went into the side rooms and argued about it and came back and did more. But you can't do that for constitutional stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't work that way.
No.
So it's just voters saying, I don't want tax.
Yeah.
Check.
Yeah. Right.
And because of this table, because of our discussions, I was for the 51%. But when you put it that way in regards to it doesn't get flushed out, it doesn't get discussed. It's just, hey, candy, like you said, eye candy, vote for it. I'm now not, I'd rather see the 60-40 or whatever.
I would much rather see the 60-40.
And now that it's kind of shown that way because of our discussions, like, we don't get to, and we don't get to learn about it as well.
That's right. We're deprived. All we get are TV
ads, our radio ads, which is all PR.
Or memes.
Or memes, exactly, that really don't dive deep into the repercussions of whatever decision's made.
That's
well,
right.
Think
there's always going to be the yin and the yang. And always.
You need 60% to override a governor's veto. So there's this idea that you need a supermajority to do something extraordinary, right?
Right.
So,
right.
But our Constitution in Ohio isn't like that. Now,
that's right.
Florida, it's 60%. Ohio, it's just more than 50%, which makes it, that's a very low bar.
Yeah, and this is relevant to what's going on nationally with the federal government.
Yeah.
It's like, look, you want to create a constitutional amendment that gives people a right to abortion. Well, go get the votes.
Yeah,
and amend the Constitution.
In the federal system, it's 3/4.
Yeah.
It's 75%.
It's 75%. Go get the votes and amend the Constitution. Mm-hmm. The idea here is it shouldn't be a majority rule, right? We have these baselines.
Oh.
And there's checks and balances on it. And by by using the Constitution as a pseudo revised code,
right,
you end up with these it's crazy. And people choose issues not without concern about how the same power will be used the next time.
Exactly.
So look, if you're on one side of the abortion debate and you favored having a constitutional amendment, fine, you got your amendment, but now guess what? We're going to get rid of property tax. And now we're going to get rid of this. Now we're going to have marijuana. Right. Now we're going to have casinos. Now we're going to, it's like it never ends then.
Yeah.
So look.
So where's the funding for pregnancy centers going to come from, whether they're pro-abortion or anti?
That's right.
If they receive some kind of state of Ohio subsidy, hey man, you start a flat tax and you have any kind of reasonable sales tax, and then you eliminate all the property tax. And listen, property taxes are way too high. Like, there were certain property taxes, there are right now certain property taxes like emergency measures and continuation. And what they do in some cases, by virtue of how you voted previously on those property taxes locally, they build into the language an unvoted increase. And that's one of the things the bill that DeWine vetoed would have taken care of. Any increase would have had to be voted on.
Gotcha.
But right now, under the current law, if you built it in to the fine print of a previous levy, it's like it has a life of its own, and the voters have no veto power. So I get that people are mad about their property taxes, and they are too high in many cases. But like, we're gonna throw the baby out with the.
This is a perfect look. I'm not suggesting for a minute that I love property taxes.
No.
Nor am I suggesting it's a bad idea to get rid of property taxes.
Yeah.
But what I am suggesting is we've got half the discussion here, if any.
Yeah.
We have a budget in this state that's premised on property taxes.
Yeah.
And if we get rid of that, where's the money coming from?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I would much rather have a debate about where are we going to cut the spending,
right?
As opposed to or at least at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people that are frustrated about government spending, because, you know, we'll talk a little bit about the rescissions bill, but because government almost never cuts anything. And even a cut in the rate of increase is called a cut in D.C. talk. Let's say the budget's $1 million and let's say inflation is 10%. If the government only increases, say, $1,050,000, they'll say that's a cut because it didn't fully cover the 10%. It's not 1.1 million, it's 1.05 million. And somehow, even though you're increasing it, it's called a cut. And people are so frustrated with this crap, with the federal and state government and their local governments, that there's this idea now, let's just take their money away. And that will force them somehow to make these cuts. But that is a brutal, like, that is a terribly awful way to cut.
Short-sighted.
I'm going to get accused.
That's like your spouse.
That's what
shopping
I'm saying.
Too That's much right. at Kroger, like, and you just take away the checkbook from your spouse.
That's right. So who would like?
So
exactly
then you get no groceries.
Exactly where I was going with this.
Yeah, like,
we all deal with this on our personal levels, mm-hmm. whether you're married, whether you're single, but we have a household budget. And any young individual joining the real world, joining the ranks at whatever age you did it, you have this issue that you have to tackle.
I have
X living amount of within dollars your coming means. In, and I have X amount of dollars going out, but I want to do these other things. I don't have that. You have to fix this.
Yeah.
And you don't just say, well, I'm going to get rid of groceries or
or
the revenue. It's like, wait a minute. You have to. This is a discussion.
Yeah,
that has to happen.
We fund our schools largely out of property tax.
Well, and you know that's where I was thinking too.
So, Steve, what are you going to do? Eliminate schools?
Right. The grocery example is that
it might
everybody.
Not be a bad idea.
The grocery example is probably the best way to say it. It's like everybody considers they're part of the budget. Groceries.
That's right. Essential.
Essential.
That's right.
And
whether it's true or not, that they consider
I get it. I empathize. Yeah. I totally get it, because once you are being fed by the government money, you kind of built your business or built your organization or you built the support services around that. And once it's gone, you didn't have plan B.
That's right.
You didn't think about it or didn't have to.
Because
I get it. Right.
So
I get it.
Anybody who's done this, like, look, honey, we want to buy a house or we want to go on this trip. We need to figure this out. So somewhere we need to cut some money, and we can live without this.
Yes, right.
But it takes there's a multiple things that you discuss with this.
Right.
And the idea is if that's happening on the General Assembly floor, at least there's some discussion.
Yeah, there's negotiation, compromise.
Yeah, and we may not like it, but it's better than just amending the Constitution.
So that kind of leads us into this rescissions bill that passed the Senate yesterday. It's only $9 billion, but if you check around, it is the largest rescissions bill like ever passed under this provision that they used in U.S. history. So we're like $36, $37 trillion in debt, and it was a 50-50, 50% for, 50% against, and J.D. Vance had to break the tie and vote with his tie-breaking vote to approve the rescission.
I feel so old when you say it was only $9 billion.
It's only $9 billion.
We can't even wrap your head around $9 billion.
It's
we're talking about, but we have to say only $9 billion because we're in the trillion in the hole. Think about that.
It's a drop of water in the
ocean.
That's
sick.
And they couldn't even get a majority to pass that. They needed a tiebreaker. And this was largely over foreign aid, and, you know, like USAID, and cutting back the amount they're giving to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, stuff like that. These were DOGE cuts in this rescission.
And we could barely,
it's so minor, you know.
And you can understand why Elon is so frustrated by this, because he goes and does all this work. Yeah. And it's like, look, this is so obvious. Just do this.
Yeah.
Because back to your household budget. Holy crap. We've signed up. You've got a Netflix account and I have a Netflix account. We need to cancel one of those.
Yeah.
And it's like saying no to that.
Yeah. So take one of the powerhouses of public broadcasting, Boston's WGBH, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's gigantic. And they've put out great stuff over the years. Well, they can go get sponsors. They can do what CBS and NBC and Fox do.
That's right.
Go get Pepsi Cola to put ads in.
Because once you eliminate the funding from the government, that also eliminates the regulations on what you can or can't sell.
That's right.
And I guess I was looking at it from the aspect of NPR, National Public Radio. That their budget from the national, from the feds, is much smaller than the TV side of it.
Sure.
But once that money is gone, you don't have to limit what you do.
Well, that's right.
I'm not saying public radio will turn into a commercial radio station. I'm not meaning that.
But it
opens up the opportunities. You can do more and probably make up that budget.
Well,
take
Bob Vila's This Old House as an example. So that started out on public television, right? And then when he commercialized it and started working with Sears and Roebuck, and he's endorsing Craftsman tools and all that kind of stuff, he had to go to a cable channel, and he became a multimillionaire.
Yeah, that show blew up.
That show blew up, man,
because of his branding.
And
as
it's still going strong, even though Bob Vila's gone.
Right. And This Old House on public television still going strong, decades.
So
strong.
I guess the point is, it's like this is the classic, right?
Yeah.
You get reliant on the government teeth.
Yes. Yeah,
you do.
And that's it. It's good enough. And my mentor used to say about this stuff, about getting too caught up in if you work for the government or if you're a government attorney, you get on the opium.
Yeah.
And you don't, like, you're to your point, Brett.
Yeah.
And look, I'm not faulting government lawyers. Good for you. You've made a great career. Great. But you get limited in your scope.
Yeah.
Like, that's all you'll do. And then you've set your budget for that. And you don't ever see beyond that horizon because you don't have to.
Yeah.
And, there's a reason why the free market works. It's because it unlocks our human creativity and ingenuity to go do more and do better.
Yeah.
But
I guess
because
I
you have to.
Yeah,
because
and
you
I guess,
have to.
I get that they want to cut it now, but why can't it be a graduated over the next 5 years
well, not,
that it goes down to zero?
They're not dropping all the, you know, all the funding of corporation.
Sure.
They're cutting it back.
Cutting it back. So at least it gives those that are receiving the funds an opportunity going, okay, we know our budget's going to get cut over the next 5 years, you know, well, graduate, whatever it might be.
Hey, Republicans you know? Have been talking about how biased public radio and public TV are for decades. And if they didn't see this coming, right, like they were negligent as managers of public radio and public TV.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been hearings after hearings, yeah. And they've confronted these public TV and radio people with their own statements, with their own blogs, with their own tweets. And they're like, you know, you said this about you know, this official or, you know, that elected person, and yet you say today that you're unbiased. Clearly you're biased. Mm-hmm. And if you're biased, go out in the private sector like Fox or MSNBC and go be biased all you want. But why should the public be funding biased news?
Well, I always use abortion to showcase this. So I have a buddy that we argue about this. He goes, well, half the country is in favor of abortion. I said, well, that means the other half isn't.
Yeah.
All right. So look, or maybe he says 60%. I say, that means 40% aren't.
Yeah.
So why would you force the 40% to pay for something they're not part of? In other words, at least don't fund it from the government.
Exactly.
At least don't do that.
Like the Hyde Amendment.
The Hyde Amendment.
Which they've
yes.
gotten rid of.
Yeah. So at least don't pay, at least don't force taxpayers who don't agree to fund it. And like, what's the government doing in that business anyway?
That's right.
Right. So these are the things that, I don't know where we got off on this tangent, but the idea here is,
yeah.
maybe here's my saying, all it's always easy to spend somebody else's money. Always.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's almost, and once it's spent, it's like we're seeing, it's almost impossible to roll it back.
Yeah. Well, leading into that Supreme Court decision, Steve, if you want to talk about that a little bit on the president, any president, whether it's Biden or Trump or Obama or George Bush, being able to hire and fire executive branch department employees.
Yeah, again, I think this was merely, and again, I can't stress this enough, this is merely a review of an injunction or a court order of a lower court preventing Trump from implementing his executive action to fire a bunch of Department of Education workers.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So the other side, somebody says, look, this, we can't allow this. This is unconstitutional, or he doesn't have this power, whatever it is. So they go into court and say, look, we are hereby suing President Trump because we don't think he has the power to do this. We want you to declare that for us. And in the meantime, please issue an injunction that says he's not allowed to go forward with this until we litigate it.
Yeah.
That's what that's where the legal issue has come to a head. It's not whether he's allowed to hire and fire. It's whether there's an injunction that should stay in place. Now, that said, baked into the cake of making the decision on the injunction is one of the criteria that says likelihood of success on the merits. So you're never going to get an injunction on something if you can't win.
Yeah.
Because, look, irreparable harm there may be, big cost there may be.
Yeah.
It may ruin your life, and that probably is happening. Just people are getting fired. I get it. It may be. But if you have no chance of ever winning the litigation – the court shouldn't stop the implementation of the action you're challenging.
I would just say to my friends who work for any government, like, where is your bitching and where is your sympathy when some private corporation like Intel fires 15,000 employees?
That's right.
Like, who does a big boo-hoo operation when in the private sector, you or I or Brett, we lose our job if we're working at a factory?
It is interesting how that empathy level is just different.
But if a government employee loses their job, oh my God, it's a catastrophe.
At least I, and I think all three of us, have small businesses.
Yeah.
And during COVID, none of the government workers gave a rat's ass.
No, they did
about
not.
The fact that my doors were shuttered.
No, right. The Department of Health shut down restaurants all over Ohio.
I lost my job. I didn't get paid for a year and a half. Lost my job.
Right.
And nobody cared.
Nope.
And I was howling at the moon.
Yep.
And nobody cared.
Nope.
Because, safety. Well, most of the people who didn't care were getting a paycheck. So, and they were working for the government.
That's
Look, I'm not unsympathetic to people losing their jobs. Right. But as you, Brett, you made the point earlier, it's like, look, you signed up for this. You know, this is like, you know, it's like the NPRs of the world. It's like, listen, you want the government money, you better, it comes with a condition. It always does.
Always does.
Right.
And you
every paycheck comes with a condition.
That's
quite
right.
Frankly, government or private sector.
I mean, at one time,
harsh it may be, but you signed up for it.
I mean, at one time, the city of Cincinnati, Columbus, and Cleveland had people out shoveling up horse shit in the public, you know, roads and ditches, right? Those jobs became obsolete when cars came along. So you fire the shit shovelers, right?
Right.
Like, okay, you know that that's your job, and when it becomes obsolete, you're obsolete. Well, that happens in the private sector all the time.
All the time.
I wonder if, and I know this scenario would have never happened, but let's play this out, that if it weren't Trump firing them, if it were Biden firing them, or Obama firing them, or one of the Bushes,
Clinton,
would it have been such a, oh my gosh, what are you doing?
Bloodletting, right.
Would it have been this type of a spotlight on people walking out of a building crying, carrying boxes? Would that have happened if it weren't but for Trump?
I don't think so.
And I don't think so either. Right. So I think it's getting blown out of proportion because of
it is.
Him.
I agree with you. And this is you can't, I think you're so right. If you look at some of the Doge stuff that they went in and did, like on paper, there's no way you can disagree with it. You just can't.
Right.
I mean, if
we're
spending, it's like the old $1,000 hammer in the middle. It's like, and I get it. I'm not going to go into the weeds of what Doge was doing, but a lot of it was like that. And Elon was like, we're employing 500 people here and they don't even know, they can't even tell me what their job is.
Yeah.
Like anybody who runs a business would say, like you can't argue with
he
that.
He asked them to write a paragraph describing their job.
And they couldn't.
And they objected to doing that?
Or they couldn't, either way. And Brett, your point is this. It's like, all right, if Obama was doing this, and I think he did do some of this, if I'm not, I may be wrong.
I think you're right.
He did do some of this.
Clinton did some of Clinton this did some with of this. Newt Gingrich.
And if
the
they were doing
The era of big government so is this, over. Remember that?
Yeah. It's this Trump derangement syndrome. Because Trump did it, it's bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, the bigger picture here is Trump is doing quite a bit. I had this conversation. We were at a party the other night, and
he is doing quite a bit.
It's like, look, you can disagree with, and I do disagree with some of the stuff Trump does.
Sure,
maybe
we all do,
not the same stuff that those who don't like him are disagreeing with. But look, there's certain things that are just sort of common.
Yeah.
I mean, look, Iran doesn't have nukes, and we're not at war.
Right?
And it's like, it's hard to say that's bad.
Yeah, exactly.
And even if you do find something, like just because Trump did it, had Biden have done that, we'd been cheering.
See, I'd rather
And I would have too.
I'm with you. I would rather talk about the issues. I'm not worried about whether it's Trump or Biden. Like in the big, beautiful bill, there are some really terrible ideas in that bill.
Yeah.
You know, and I get it. Like it's making sausage. And last week's show, Steve, when you were not here, but Brett and I talked at length about this crazy thing they did for newborns, where they're going to give every newborn baby establish an account for them, a Trump account, they're calling it, of $1,000. And we know where that's going. In 20 years, that'll be $50,000.
Right. And once you open that can of worms. I mean,
it's total socialism. You're giving people money because they were born.
It's stupid.
It's so stupid. It boggles the mind.
First of all, it's not enough now to give anybody any substantial help. And it won't be enough later, and no matter how much you give.
Yeah.
It's the camel in the tent.
Exactly.
And try
to get rid of that program.
Oh, right. Once that starts, well, my kid got it. How come I can't?
They're not going to go backwards because our children are liberated now. They're not going to give us that $1,000
of course
with
not.
Interest.
Right.
So, where's the equal protection?
Yeah. So if I'd have gotten $1,000, say even if you adjusted for inflation, say what is it, $500 when I was born, or $250?
Yeah,
it's like if I had $250 invested, let's do some. I want that money.
Yeah. Exactly.
And because it's such a pittance, as you say, it will inevitably grow.
It has to because it'll never be enough.
That's not enough.
That's not enough. Yeah. Well, and I don't know if you brought up the big beautiful bill. I don't know if you caught this or not, but apparently congressional staffers added to the big beautiful bill.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so, the congressional staff. Yes, they were making some changes, and Trump didn't like some of those changes.
Yeah.
No.
One was, and this I thought this was really interesting about gambling, and I didn't even know this existed. So okay. So bettors are currently able to deduct 100% of their gambling losses. So they only pay taxes on their winnings.
Mm.
But starting next year, only 90% of gambling losses can be deducted. So if a professional gambler wins $100,000, then loses $100,000 that same year, they're going to have to pay taxes on that.
Right. And that's been a law for
And years. It was added, out of the 900, a staffer added that.
It just is.
Because they can.
Because they can.
Yeah.
That's the more. Of 900 pages, they're just slipping shit
in here. They slip in a little.
Isn't that incredible? I think putting light on this, you know, this whole process of putting these little instances of like, wait a minute, congressional staffer.
And then they have to go back and try to clean it up, but you got to get a majority to do that.
And this is like the congressional achievement of the year. There's always one, right?
Yeah.
One big budget bill and that's
right.
it. And
right.
that's all they do all year long. And then they have hearings that are just for show.
And if you talk to your, you know, retail level congressperson, they will tell you that the leadership, whether it's Nancy Pelosi or Mike Johnson, they're negotiating all this with the White House and the Senate. And then, like you say, staffers are stuffing stuff.
Because nobody knew about it.
Nobody knew about this gambling thing. Until they read. Okay, the vote's this morning.
And what am I supposed to do, vote no because of that?
That's right.
Even if they did know. Exactly. Yeah.
So like, you agree with 90% of it, 10% is an atrocity. And you got to take the whole bitter pill.
Anybody
or
who's
at all.
Like, go through a divorce, and you go to court, and this kind of crap gets thrown at you at the last minute.
Yeah. Mm.
And you see it all the time. Wait a minute, you want that too?
Yeah.
It's like, all right, screw it, take it, whatever.
Or a real estate closing.
A real estate closing.
Right. Well, you got to pay this fee for the buyer, and you're
right.
like, what?
Yeah. Wait a minute, it's $500 more. All right.
Oh, God. Just do it. Exactly. Oh,
just do it.
Perfect. Yeah. Another two good, great examples. Exactly. Yeah.
One of the topics, guys, if we want to talk about this, I'm a little troubled about these deep fake videos that are now really commonplace. Mm-hmm. And one came up about Marco Rubio, right? Mm. Where AI duplicated his voice and obviously his face, and he's saying the most outrageous stuff. And I can just imagine some foreign country, you know, seeing AI give a completely fabricated speech, and it's just BS. And there's another one going around where Clint Eastwood is supposedly on Jimmy Kimmel's show, and it's completely...
This is scary stuff.
It's made up, and apparently, what they did with Clint is in this made-up, fabricated AI scene... Is they disagree, and Clint Eastwood says, F you, Jimmy, except he says what the F is, and then he gets up and walks off the set. And I can't tell you the number of people that I have seen that, like, reposted, that it's real,
mm-hmm.
and it's not real.
It's not real. Yeah. This is a very, very disturbing trend.
It is disturbing. Yep.
Because, look, we are on video weekly.
Yeah.
People could make us say almost whatever they want.
Exactly
yes.
right.
And what are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
Like, really? I mean, how are you going to prove it?
Yeah.
What are you going to do about it?
Without going through a legal and an expensive battle.
Yeah, we don't have the money for that.
Your reputation is tarnished immediately. You don't grab that back.
And you cannot.
You can't.
Even if you had all the money in the world, you can't claw that back.
You can't.
Have you seen all the fake pictures of, like, Trump and Epstein, for example? They're showing these guys like in hot tubs together and all this stuff.
And some of them are obviously fake and parodies and spoofs.
Yeah.
So the courts are going to have to, the courts are really going to have to figure this out because on the one hand, you know, remember the, who was the hustler?
Larry Flint
did this with Jerry Falwell.
Yeah.
And showed Jerry Falwell screwing a horse or a dog. I don't remember what it was.
A chicken or something.
It was something just sort of foul. And that was a parody.
Yeah.
And, you know, the court, I think, basically in that case said, look, Falwell's a public figure and this was fair game and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So there's going to have to be some line drawn. Like, look, we're in public. We put ourselves out in public. But it's clearly not a parody. The Clint Eastwood thing is not a parody. It's not obvious that it's a parody. It's not obvious that it's a joke. It's not obvious that it's not
real. Some of this is done just to prove it can be done.
That's right. And
right now.
And you know the other thing I see on Rogue? I see this regularly. Where people will take a snippet from Joe Rogan's show and say, yeah, pull up that video. Let's look at that video. And then they play a video. But I've been watching this because it's the same, hey, pull up that video always, but it's always a different video.
Yeah.
And that's like the simplified version of this.
Yeah.
They've just cut in to make it look like Rogan's talking about what they want him to talk about.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think about this from Rogan's standpoint. I'd be pissed. Yeah. Be like, look, I didn't support what you're doing here. This is nothing I wanted to endorse.
I think the AI video thing could change the social media landscape over the next couple of years. It could implode. Social media could implode because
of this. I agree with you.
Because why are we watching this crap? You're finally going to realize, why am I watching this stuff? It's not. I don't even know if it's real or not.
You don't even know if it's real. Yeah, it's
so slippery. I think it's going to implode. And we're going to access stuff like we're creating in a different manner, behind a paywall, behind something that's at least protected.
It's like,
I don't know how, but
so where you're going, Brett, is like when we really do need to listen to one of our elected leaders, like the president or whoever it is, or a foreign, like Putin or Zelensky, if somebody is faking them and yet maybe that one time, like it's real. We won't know it's real.
Well, remember the I wasn't alive at the time, but there was huge controversy. This goes way back. Orson Welles did this with the War of the Worlds.
Exactly.
You know, he plays this radio show.
That's a great example. Yeah.
And everybody thought it was real, and it was just it was fake. It was all fake.
Even though, because they would miss the lead in.
Yeah. Hey,
ladies and gentlemen, this is a fictional broadcast for the next 2 hours, and then you tune in 10 seconds after that. Yeah. Disclaimer.
Yeah.
And then you think it's real.
You think it's real. And, I wonder, and this is, I have said here at the table many, many times in our lives in the last decade, we have lived through what I think will be recorded in history as the two greatest scandals of all time. One is the government response and BS around COVID and how that was trumped up and how that was, no pun intended, and how that was
suppressed even.
And the truth was suppressed and agendas were promoted.
Huge scandal.
I think when all of that finally plays out, and it's still continuing to play out.
Yes, it is.
When all that finally plays out, people will realize how insane that really was. And the second biggest scandal is Biden and his incompetence. And I don't mean incompetence in like the sense you're thinking. I mean like truly mental incompetent.
Yeah.
Now this is coming out with his auto pen and the pardons. It's like, I don't think, and it reminds me, like, what if we had this technology during the Biden era as it is now?
Yeah.
People would have him on stage giving speeches and making it look totally normal.
Yeah.
Like, we could invent a president.
You could. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's like, think how scary that is.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Right?
That's Big Brother. Like,
put
a
hologram of him in the bowels of Congress giving a State of the Union speech, and it's not even a real person.
Well, you wonder.
It's just a projected image.
Well, and I think the people that watch us and listen to us probably are smarter than most just because you listen and follow us. But it's that we have to stop looking at something and all of a sudden sharing because, oh my gosh, because your emotions drive you to share because this is such crap. Oh my God, did you hear that?
Right.
Take a beat and really look at what you're trying to share because you're only adding to the cacophony of BS that's out there.
That's right.
That it's not true.
That's great.
We have the control to stop this.
Yes. Yeah. Take a look and think. So
think about it.
Like this knee-jerk emotional response, particularly from our youth, because youths are typically knee-jerk and emotional. It's not a criticism. It's a reality.
It's true.
Yeah,
And you know, I remember like the George Floyd video came out and all this stuff, and people were sending it to me. And the first thing I thought was, wow. But then I thought, I wonder what's going on.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it was right. I'm not saying it was wrong. Right. But my first reaction even to that was, I need information here in order to form an opinion. And that's my legal education, I think.
Yeah.
And that's me spending years in a courtroom hearing stuff and analyzing stuff with a premise and basis of a Socratic education. We need to get to that. We need to get to that.
Right.
So I wonder if that Clint Eastwood clip is real.
We need to
I wonder
back.
Why he did that.
Right.
And this was another like really terrible thing that Obama did in particular, when there were two people of different races involved in somebody's death.
Well, the famous Boston break-in, like that situation.
Yeah, and the what was his name, Zimmerman down there in Florida, who got cleared, and Trayvon Martin and all it just
you have to
the
pause.
Shooting in Ferguson, Missouri.
You have to pause because some of them are racist and bad. Some of them are not. Yeah. Some of them you don't know. And you can't jump to a knee-jerk conclusion.
No.
It's sort of like what we're talking about. This comes right back home. It's what we're talking about, the Congress or the General Assembly floor. You need to debate these things and ask questions and figure out what's really going on rather than take the clickbait.
Well, we have our George Floyd situation with that, what's her name, Tamara, can't remember her name, the pregnant 19-year-old mother She had children in her car out there in Blendon Township in the Kroger parking lot. She had stolen liquor. She as a six-month-old pregnant lady, what if she had just surrendered to the police? She probably would have served no jail time, as probably some kind of suspended thing, and she would pay a fine. Instead, because she floored the car at a cop standing in front of the car, he shot and killed her, which caused the baby to die, of course. And now that has to be considered by a lot of people. It's instantly a racist thing because the cop's white and she was black.
Mm.
And like you're saying, Steve, slow down.
Maybe it is.
Let's hear the evidence.
Maybe it is.
Yeah.
And maybe it is.
Maybe it is.
And maybe it's not.
And maybe it's both.
And maybe it's both.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so slow down. We don't need people to racialize or pick one version of reality versus the other. Look, until let the facts come out.
A very dear friend who sent me the Floyd thing, and I'd already seen it, but sent it to me. And I said, I wonder, my question to him was, I wonder if this is racially motivated.
Exactly.
And I would need to know more. And he goes, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't.
He was sure of it.
Sure of it.
Sure of it.
And look, I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm not saying he's right. But the being sure of it, seeing a clip, seeing a meme, right, seeing Clint Eastwood,
right,
you can't do it anymore because there are so many agendas.
Well, but to your friends, you know, like I would say to him, well, pull back the lens on that scene and you'll see there was one of the four policemen that went to prison. One was a guy with his knee on his head, but there was also a black female, I believe, policeman, an Oriental, not sure of Korean or Japanese descent. It was a diverse group of police.
Right.
But the guy whose knee was on his neck was the white guy. So it had to be racial.
It had to be racial. And look, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was motivated by I don't know. And I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying you can't jump to conclusions, or many things can be true at the same time. And
yeah.
And the problem you run into here is, I think, maybe it's this attention span that we've created that is so short.
It's a little bit.
Well, we want to get right to the nub. Like, mm-hmm.
Even
know,
me. There was never a time in my life until about 3 years ago that there wasn't at least two books on my nightstand. And now I get it's like it's not there. I had to think about this. Like, I'm reading books on tape, so I'm not, you know, it's not the same. And I'm not spending the time really digging into stuff that I used to. Yeah. And I think it's because of this.
Mm-hmm. Twelve Angry Men. You got Henry Fonda saying, well, wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
Let's slow down.
One of my favorite.
I know y'all want to go home and drink a beer, put your feet up.
It's so hot in here. Right.
Right. You know.
Right.
But yeah, slow down and analyze, because somebody's life is at stake here. You know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We got to wrap it up.
Well,
good and bad.
I want to do a real quick, if I can, and I'll do this real quick. So the loser of the week to me is this unnamed female driver of that red minivan that caused this massive pileup of four cars behind her. She stopped at the I-670 exit on I-71. She stopped on I-71 in the middle lane in a red minivan, and she came to a cold stop, and there's four cars behind her that come sailing up, and the final guy who came up, like, he didn't realize that they were stopped, and he piles in, and people had broken ribs and all kinds of injuries. She fled the scene, and this happened on April the 30th, and the Columbus Police Department, all they had was this fuzzy ODOT video, and they could make out just barely a certain decal. And this Columbus police guy, probably using AI, something called their flock files, he goes into the flock files and finds 254 red minivans in Franklin County that could have been there. They finally eliminated everybody but one minivan because of the placement of a decal.
That's awesome. That's scary. Wow. And it's
scary,
awesome.
But awesome.
On the back.
Yeah.
And they contacted this lady, and she said, yes, that was me. Now, of course, she's pleading not guilty to the third-degree misdemeanor of reckless operation.
Mm.
But, so she's a total loser. God. You know, and so the winner for me was the police officer who was assigned that case.
Good for him.
He found the perp.
Yeah, good for him. Winner, I think, finally Trump's turning up some steam on the Ukraine-Russia war.
Yep.
We got to get this
I was going there too.
This got to get done. And loser, Husted, answer some emails, respond to press. I don't get this appointment.
Senator Husted.
Yeah, I don't get it. This dude's clocking in, clocking out, saying nothing, doing nothing.
Zippity-doo-dah.
Dude, if you're a short-termer and you're not going to go for the seat again, I get it. But you got to do your job.
Look, you still have a job. You've been hired to do a job.
Come on. Yeah. You know? Anyway.
He's one of the guys that pushed Jobs Ohio, another one of our favorite programs.
He just is non-responsive to anything.
Yep.
So, anyway.
I mean, look, I don't necessarily have a thing I hate this week, but a thing I love. You know, I had a Norm. You were there. We had a little send-off party for my son who's going off to the Army, and it dawned on me this morning that, you know, I've got a few more days with him before he's off to serve his country, and lots of other parents are probably going through the same thing.
Yeah.
Because it's about that time. You signed up after high school. It's like if it isn't Monday or Tuesday, it's kind of like it's already happened or it's coming up. So hats off to all you folks who not only have signed up, but the families and the parents who are supporting that.
And a big thank you for doing it.
And a big thank you.
Recruitment in the military is way up now.
Yep. So, I mean, that's and just being around family, being around friends and watching people celebrate, not only graduate, like we still have a community, right? We still have it. And with all this, the memes and all the nonsense and all this other crap, nobody was on their phones.
Yeah.
Nobody was arguing about politics, whatever. It's like there was just a community coming together and talking and catching up.
Support this young man.
The moment.
So,
that's great.
You know, I watched the first half of The Deer Hunter last night. It's one of my favorite movies. And it's about three young men who go in and sign up to go to Vietnam. They didn't get drafted. They actually went in and enlisted. And it reminded me of your son and his friends at that young, tender age. And they're being silly and doing crazy stuff.
Right. And life's about to kick them in the backside.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Watch the second half of The Deer Hunter, and then you'll see the
version. It's a a serious decision.
Yeah.
So, you know, I honor your son.
Yep.
He is a magnificent young man.
Well, you just don't know him very well. No. All right. Look, commonsenseohioshow.com. If you've got a topic you want us to cover, if you want to be a guest at the table or even on Zoom, we can accommodate that. If you've got something that you want to say, or if you think you can hang with Norm and take on a debate, I would love to see that too. Good luck. Anyway, coming at you right from the middle each and every week.